Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks very much for this opportunity to express my views and for providing an occasion for a dialogue with all members about our next 4 years. I hope that this process allows us to distance ourselves, albeit briefly, from our day-to-day concerns and to take a look at the bigger picture. As the American poet Carl Sandburg once said, and I quote, "A politician should have three hats, one for throwing into the ring, one for talking through, and one for pulling rabbits out if elected." Now, the good news is that it seems I have the hat, but the bad news is that we do not yet have a rabbit to pull out of the hat. Now, jokes aside, I approach this exercise very much in the same spirit as I did in 05. That is, remaining at the service of all WTO members and contributing to the strengthening of this organization. Let me start by reiterating my deep belief in the primary purpose of the WTO, which is to open trade to the benefit of all. The pursuit of openness, the guarantee of the most favored nation principle and non-discriminatory treatment by and among members, and a commitment to transparency in the conduct of activities remain our founding political values. I remain convinced that the gradual opening of domestic markets to international trade, with justifiable exceptions or with adequate flexibilities, allows the achievement of sustainable development, raising people's welfare, reducing poverty, and fostering peace and stability. But this does not mean that the benefits of rule-based trade opening accrue automatically to everyone. Hence this notion of a Geneva consensus, which I floated in this same room in 05. It is about trade opening, but it is also about proper domestic and international policies which helps translate more open trade into real, increased, and perceived benefits for our citizens. We are living in a time of crisis. Its full social impact is unfortunately still to come, and it will inevitably create more political pressures. And it is precisely now, when protectionist temptations abound, that the value of the multilateral trading system is all the more apparent to us. The GATT WTO system of global trade rules, patiently constructed over the last 60 years, is first and foremost a provider of confidence for economic operators. And as the crisis has shown, confidence is today the missing link to bring the world back onto a path of growth. Therefore, our main objective for the years to come, as I see it, is to strengthen the role of the WTO as the global trade body. This means making the WTO more development-friendly, more user-friendly, so that its benefits are felt by all, large and small, rich and poor, strong and weak. Our core business is opening markets and designing trade routes. This is and will remain our unfinished business. Our task is far from over. Now, if we agree on this overall objective, which I believe we do, how can we increase our chances of achieving it? based on the experience of the last 4 years and on the consultations I've had with many of you in recent weeks, there are four areas which, in my view, we should work to improve. And these four areas are negotiation, implementation, coherence, and outreach. Now, starting with negotiations, contrary to convention and wisdom, the WTO is more than its negotiations. But delivering on the negotiating mandate of the round remains the litmus test of our collective ability to strengthen the global trading system. And this is why I believe that concluding the round is and should remain our number one priority. Beyond the trade-offs required to conclude the round and also beyond the market access that it will bring, lies its hugely important systemic value. The biggest prize in the Doha round is the certainty, the predictability, and the stability it will bring to global trade. And in a moment of crisis, such as the one we're witnessing today, it's in these moments that the value of this insurance policy increases. The hard fact is that concluding the round is difficult precisely because its results will be meaningful. This round is two or three times greater than previous ones in terms of cuts, in terms of commitments. Also, this is a round focused on benefits for developing countries. This is a true development round. If measured in terms of duties foregone, two-thirds of the potential benefits of tariffs and subsidy cuts resulting from this round will accrue to developing countries' exports. Now, what we need to do as of now is to reset the process at political level, building on where we left it last year. We walked along the Doha round path for 7 years now, and we are 80% of the way there. We've done it together with a bottom-up, inclusive process. A lot has been achieved. If you look back from where we started, there's a fairly long list of issues where views have converged. And I believe the time is ripe to start taking the negotiations to the last phase, that is running the last mile. Now, looking beyond Doha, there are many new ideas floating around on potential areas for our future works. Many of these have also come up in my consultations with you. Take climate change, where I'm convinced that the first step should be a multilateral agreement embracing all major emitters that we all hope to see emerge at Copenhagen. Issues related to food security, energy, labor, competition, investment, or financial protectionism, however defined, are also in the air. My own sense is that our capacity to project ourselves into the future depends on our capacity to make the present happen. These issues do not belong to the current agenda. Obviously, nothing prevents us from thinking about the future, but I believe serious work on any future topic should commence when the finish line of the Doha round is firmly in sight. Let me mention two areas which are part of our current mandate and which, in my view, deserve more of our attention: regional trade agreements and rules of origin. On RTAs, To be frank, it's difficult to see why such deep concessions and commitments are undertaken today in the context of a preferential agreement without any consequences at the multilateral level. We all know this is a complex issue. We all know there are differences between RTAs aiming at deep regional integration and other free trade agreements. But if we are serious about the prevalence of the most favored nation principle, we should collectively think about some way of gradually multilateralizing the concessions which are made in free trade agreements. Food for thought for Article 24 negotiators. On rules of origin, the proliferation of different regimes, regional, bilateral, unilateral, needs, in my view, to be addressed head-on in order to simplify the lives of trade and economic operators. These two examples, RTAs and rules of origin, show that the WTO's current agenda is anything but old-fashioned. A lot of what we do today was already in the agenda of the UE round, even in the Tokyo round, to be more precise. But the fact is that they remain as relevant, if not more so, for economic operators today. There are also a number of ideas being floated as far as the negotiating processes are concerned. Many have been explored in the Sutherland report as well as in the report of the Warwick Commission. When we negotiate, we currently operate within three constraints: decision-making by consensus, all negotiating items bundled into a single undertaking, and a bottom-up negotiating process. I do not think that the consensus about consensus should be reopened. Taking decisions by consensus is tough, but it increases the legitimacy of agreements which in an international forum, which in my view is necessary and welcome as the degree of legitimacy decreases with distance from domestic political processes. So the question then is how to build consensus. Resorting to the well-known concentric circles approach is probably the only efficient method available, but it demands a rigorous transparency commitment by all. Everyone must do his or her part. And we must recognize that there is not yet enough transparency in the way we currently work, hence room for improvement there. We also need to find ways to move faster to the center of gravity on the negotiating topics, that is to increase our negotiating efficiency. And here, in my view, there is something to be learned about the negotiating processes in other international forums. Sectoral plurilateral agreements or concepts like critical mass have already been tested. But again, I believe this should not be the focus of our work at this stage. Number two, implementation. This second area should be improving implementation of existing agreements. When one looks at the functions of the WTO, there is a striking contrast between the sophistication of the negotiations, the solidity of the dispute settlement mechanism, and the fragility of surveillance and transparency, which is nevertheless one of the pillars of the multilateral trading system. The mandates for notifications and the peer review are there, but in my view, not enough attention and resources have been given to their implementation. A certain lack of overall vision and of analytical capacity handicaps the surveillance function of the WTO. There are some bright spots. Progress has been made in transparency in regional trade agreements, for example. And with the monitoring of the measures taken in response to the crisis, we've shown that we can collectively make a more muscular use of these mechanisms. But many committees register a poor record of notifications and, most importantly, of the quality and examination. As one of you told me the other day, we've been collectively a bit lazy on this field. So the challenge is how to improve this. We could make better use of technical assistance, focus more on the capacity of members to comply with their notifying obligations, and better prepare them for a more effective peer review. We could better operationalize trade policy reviews. We could also redesign notification formats so that they become multi-purpose and more user-friendly. An improved surveillance process would surely increase trust in the system and avoid jamming the dispute settlement mechanism through a sort of early warning system. As for dispute settlement, which obviously is part of implementation, my sense is that overall it is working well. In addition to what is being negotiated in the DSU review process, there are some areas for improvement, such as reducing the administrative costs for the Secretariat, I mean the length of submissions and annexes to be translated is one issue to be tackled, and also addressing peaks of activity. Compliance with dispute settlement decisions is also an area to be given attention, as is the participation of developing countries in dispute settlement, where I believe that a boost to the advisory center on WTO law would surely be welcome. And also how to make better and more frequent use of good officers, mediation, and arbitration, procedures which are provided for in our existing rules. Number three, coherence. How to ensure more coherence, both internally and externally. Starting with the Secretariat, my view is that in spite of past progress, there remains a need to further decompartmentalize divisions, improve internal communication, enhance mobility of staff, make use of task forces, such as the one we have for the crisis monitoring, or establish a pool of experts for activities such as TPRs, technical assistance, and accessions. We should also have more informal sessions and seminars with members to look across areas covered by the WTO. Externally, the WTO is one of the planets in this global governance galaxy, and its know-how can be leveraged even more to tackle global governance challenges. The main ingredients of global governance are efficiency and legitimacy. And the key to combine these two elements is coherence. We've used our convening power to ensure a more coherent approach to different issues in the international trade and economic agenda. In the last 4 years, we have strengthened the functioning of the explicit coherence mandate that the WTO has with the World Bank and with the IMF. But we've also worked to expand the WTO's coherence with other international and regional organizations. And I intend to continue working on these lines. Aid for Trade and the Enhanced Integrated Framework are clear examples of that. Monitoring of the measures taken in the context of the crisis is another example. Trade finance and the recent initiative to convene stakeholders at the WTO to address this issue globally are also examples of our capacity to promote a more coherent approach to global problems. The same can be said of the SDTF, the Standard and Trade Development Facility. We should build on this in the future and pay more attention to the regional level, which is becoming more and more relevant, including for our trade-related technical assistance. We've engaged in joint research with other international organizations, ILO, OECD, UNCTAD, regional development banks, a joint study on trade and climate change, jointly produced by the WTO and UNEP, will soon be published. On a more macro level, the building of bridges with the UN system, with trade being part of the Millennium Development Goals endeavor, and through my own involvement in the Chief Executive's Board, should also help to improve coherence in our work with the UN family. Number four, outreach. This is one area where, despite our efforts, a lot of work remains to be done. There continues to be a disproportion between the activities we have among ourselves, over 7,000 meetings taking place in the Centre William Rappard every year, on the one side, and on the other side, the relatively low intensity of interaction with our environment and with the public. Starting with our own circle, there is room for improvement in the interaction with small and non-resident delegations. A review of the proportion of training resources offered to these members should be done so that to ensure that their needs are addressed. Then, reaching out to non-members, we have accessions, an area that many of you have pointed as needing more focus in the coming years. There is a certain malaise among acceding members as they feel that the bar for accession seems to continuously rise. There are specific concerns on the part of LDCs on the use of the guidelines for their accession to the WTO. Accession is a complex process, necessitating both domestic ownership and capacity, which indeed require hard work by many acceding members. However, I believe that there may be merit in devoting more focused efforts as well as ensuring greater political attention to accessions, in particular those of LDCs, and I, for my part, also intend to do so when this is required. Turning now to our external stakeholders, NGOs, parliaments, staffers, academics, business. There is also a need to strengthen networking and increase transparency. In the past 4 years, we've worked to enhance our engagement with civil society. We've launched a pilot accreditation project of local NGOs to facilitate their access to the WTO premises during ministerial conferences, during trade negotiation committees, and during general councils. We've devolved a greater portion of the organizational aspects of the WTO public forum to civil society, allowing civil society to itself shape the forum. And I myself have regularly engaged NGOs, both in Geneva and during my travels, acknowledging their input in our work. We've made better use of our website and of electronic dissemination through webcasts. We've strengthened our outreach to academics, in particular those in developing countries. Just this week, we've launched the WTO Essay Award for Young Economists, but there is more to do. In my consultations with civil society ahead of this meeting, a number of ideas were raised. For example, a greater opening of our trade policy reviews or greater engagement of civil society on the ground during WTO technical assistance missions. And these are areas worth exploring together. Special attention, in my view, should be given to parliamentarians and staffers who hold the key to deciding agreements at the end of the day and to adopting legislation in a WTO-consistent manner. Our most challenging outreach problem, though, remains with the general public. The WTO has a very high notoriety, but a low popularity, even if that is changing, in particular in developing countries. The WTO is too complex to be user-friendly. Communicating WTO is like telling people that Lord Jones has died when they did not even know that Lord Jones was alive. Its complexity is a handicap, something which, in my view, deserves serious thought. We need to think how we can communicate in a friendlier way. We've improved our WTO website, which is very well rated amongst surfers on the web, but more can be done using all three languages. In sum, on this, I believe we need to change gear. The classic asymmetry in the politics of trade, the many who benefit are silent, the few who suffer are vocal, means that the burden of proof is always on us. It is for us to make the case for open markets and better regulation. We need to have a better radar picture of media reporting on the WTO. Public perceptions continue to be too dotted, especially in the non-English speaking world. There is a need for further engagement with domestic and with regional media, and the WTO Secretariat cannot do it alone. We will need to work together on this. Finally, a short set of remarks about the Secretariat. The Secretariat of the WTO is small but beautiful. Comparatively small in size and therefore capable of rapidly adjusting to changes in priorities, in workloads and in tasks. beautiful because it is full of powerful intellects and efficient professionals and support staff which are devoted to servicing. Now, my overall objective as the head of the Secretariat is to enhance its capacity of providing support to members. And for that, there is a need to keep modernizing the Secretariat while keeping it frugal. Version 3, in our jargon, version 3 changes have increased productivity and will continue to do so. As to recruitment, I will continue to adhere to the principles of expertise, merit, and diversity. In the last 4 years, and even within the very limited overall staff turnover, we have increased the number of nationalities of our staff. We've added 8 new nationalities from developed and least developed countries. 60% of staff recruited at junior professional level have come from developed countries and LDCs. Developing countries and LDCs, sorry. Half of them had gone through one of our internship programs. Two-thirds of our internship went to developing countries and LDC young professionals. So, a bit of progress, but there is more to be achieved in terms of improving diversity, including in gender mainstreaming, as well as in improving our internships for young professionals, as suggested by some of you, in particular from developing and least developed countries. And I will continue to advance this. We've worked to make the WTO a greener organization by developing a plan to cut down emissions. And in this context, I believe that we could work together to use more technology and reduce the paper flow to delegations. As far as the Secretariat is concerned, I intend to pursue the objective of achieving a paperless Secretariat by 2012. On the building, our aim is to keep the renovation costs within the envelope which has been agreed by members. The renovation works have already started in the south wing with the date for the end of the entire works being autumn 2012. By then, we will have renovated the Centre William Rappard and built its extension in the current south parking. Local political specificities permitting, of course. And I count on the support and well-known lobbying skill of you all to engage in this important local campaign. There will be the inevitable disturbances during the works, which we will strive to keep to a minimum. There will be difficulties with parking, even if the Secretariat has vacated all but a handful of parking slots on site for your use. And in advance, I count on your understanding for the disturbances during the renovation and construction period. Also on the Secretariat, I believe we have to increase its services, its support, and its analytical capacity. These issues cut across all areas of improvements I have mentioned, negotiations, implementation, coherence, and outreach. We cannot do our work better without seriously increasing our research capacity, our analytical capacity, our dissemination capacity. We need to work further on our databases in terms of accessibility, in terms of interoperability, but simply producing and publishing data is not enough. We need to better analyze and share them. The WTO needs to become more of a reference on trade knowledge, i.e. on the analysis of global trade policy data and statistics. We need to move from production to interpretation, from raw numbers and facts to trade intelligence. And again, this is key to all areas I have mentioned. Also, I believe we need to continue operating as a forward-looking radar on trade issues, but in a more systematic way. We need to be fully aware of new issues and examine potential future obstacles to trade, to be at the cutting edge of awareness of the shaping factors of world trade, and we need to do that in order to continue to better serve. This requires efficient networking and hence a stronger base in the WTO, so as to be able to provide members with simulations, quantifications, scenarios, options. The changes introduced in the Secretariat so far have increased our efficiency, but we are working at near full capacity. And to be able to further improve our service to you, to be able to respond to requests for analytical work, we will need to increase our resources. Staff will have to be strengthened with more economists, more lawyers, and more communication specialists. There remains scope for redeployment, which I have done, and I will continue to do so, but my own sense is that this will not be enough. My approach to our budget has been a simple one. A budget is a forecast, not an authorization to spend. If there is money left, we give it back. And you know this is what we've done. And the introduction of an activity-based budget will make us more accountable to you, and we will have an occasion to discuss this in our next biennial budget, and I count on your support for this. One issue, as we are looking ahead, of particular concern is the current situation of the WTO staff pension plan. The plan, as I hope you're aware, is of the collective responsibility of WTO staff and members. And apart from the negative impact of the crisis on the plan, it also suffers from an actuarial deficit, which should be addressed urgently. And I trust that members will give due attention to solving this problem in the near future. While on budgetary issues, I have a concern with the issues of arrears, in particular those of our poorest members. Some thought must be given to how they could start from a clean slate. Another concern is the increase of trust funds, which implies costly administrative work, and we should seriously consider whether there is scope for integration of at least some of the current activities provided by trust funds into the regular budget. Let me finally address shortly the question of WTO ministerial meetings, which many of you have raised during our consultations. We should de-dramatize ministerial meetings, make them a more regular exercise where WTO activities are reviewed across the board to ascertain the level of satisfaction of members with the running of WTO activities and to address priorities at political level. We not had a ministerial meeting since 2005, and my own sense is that we should not close 2009 without having one. A regular ministerial meeting is one thing. Ministerial involvement in negotiation in another. And we should not confuse the two. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, no major surgery needed in the WTO. No major overhaul of the system is, in my view, required. But rather, a long to-do list to strengthen the global trading system. I'm ready to do my part and to assist members in achieving the objectives of this organization. The WTO, as a living organism, should continue to improve its capacity to rapidly react to global challenges, as we are seeing in the current crisis, and to contribute to devising solutions to those challenges. The reinforcement of the multilateral trading system, in particular through the conclusion of the round, should be our guiding light in the constellation of global governance. Let's work together to see the WTO star shining ever brighter. I thank you, Mr. Chairman.